Here we go. Our friend Bob Pompiani isn't just a cardboard cutout. He's a real live TV host in his spare time, and he's getting ready to hand the mic over to Mike Tomlin. The Detroit Lions, one of the most disappointing teams in the NFL, they're in a world, and I mean a world, of trouble right now. They are two games, maybe a game and a half, I guess. I can never figure out ties. Out of a playoff spot, maybe two and a half. I don't know how to figure this out. Limits? The Packers are 9-4-1. The Lions are 8-6. So at any rate, they're in a world of trouble with three games left. They need to win this game. The Steelers really don't need to win, honestly. You know, it would be great, and it might mean the difference between them winning a playoff game and not to clinch before that finale against the Ravens. But right now, the Steelers could lose their next two, and even if the Ravens win their next two, still comes down to the final game. Here's the coach.
As always, I'll start with a quick roundup on our last performance from last night. As I said after the game, you know, I thought we had a clear path to engineering victory. Certainly, they had established a certain personality during their four-game win streak. A major component of that was their run game, as I mentioned. They had averaged about 192 a game over the previous five games. And so certainly we had to minimize that. But it's just more than just stopping the run on specific downs per se. It's a collective approach. And I thought we did a nice job of minimizing that mode of producing victory for them, not only with the way that we played the run, but with the way we ran the ball offensively, the way we possessed the ball offensively. Us being aggressive on fourth down plays, particularly early on, was a strategic component of minimizing their run. Us getting off on third down was a major component defensively of us minimizing their run. They weren't able to get a new set of downs very often and establish the rhythm that it produced to 192 per game. And certainly we thought if we could do that, we would position ourselves to maybe take the ball away. Had a big takeaway early on from Samuel, and certainly had other opportunities that didn't come to fruition throughout. We needed to take care of the football, and we certainly did that. It wasn't easy sledding there, particularly early, but as we found our rhythm and we were able to get some things going and produce some touchdowns. As the road gets narrow, you got to score touchdowns. Field goals don't necessarily get you out of stadiums, particularly as you're battling for playoff position and people are in the same mentality doing similar things. And so I thought our ability to score touchdowns in the red area was big, was a major component of it as well. Can't say enough about the many contributions that we got from people who had an opportunity to have expanded roles. As I often say, though, there's a fine line between being a Pro Bowler and a backup in this business. I just see it through that lens. These guys are at the tip top of the food chain in terms of what they do, and usually one man's misfortune is another man's opportunity, and there were certainly examples worthy of recognition. We talked a lot about it last night. Can't say enough about Dylan and what he was able to do for us at left tackle, for example. Kenny Gainwell did an awesome job, like he always does when called upon in an expanded role. Asante getting an opportunity to start and playing a lot of football for us. Guys like Herbick, although he's been called upon a lot in the past and certainly has delivered, guys like he and Jack Sawyer had opportunities to play expanded roles as well. But it's just, it comes with this time of year. There's an attrition element to our game. That's why we take everyone's readiness very seriously, because we have to call on that again moving forward. Everyone does. And so it's important that you fortify your depths with capable people. We've worked to do that during the course of our journey and to continue to get those guys ready because you know it's coming. And so it's just good to see some of that happen. We certainly will have some more challenges, man, as we lean in on this week. Regarding some of those things, Isaac Seumalo got hurt last night. I don't know what his status is as I stand here today, but I would imagine he's certainly going to be limited at the early portions of the week, and we'll see where it leads us. The same thing could be said for Herbick with his hamstring. We'll see where it leads us. We had some guys that missed the previous game or games and are angling toward getting back. Probably the most favorable of those is Derek Harmon. He was probably healthy enough to play at the very end of last week, but as a young guy with limited rep opportunities, I didn't think it would be fair to him or for us to put him in uniform. And so he'll have an opportunity to get a complete week's work, get an opportunity to go back to his hometown and play some football. Excited about getting him back. He certainly has been an asset to us, particularly in terms of defending and stopping the run and anticipating what we're going to face this week. Man, that'll be big. Some other guys who are working their way back. Pete's still in the protocol, so we'll let the protocol be our guide in terms of his availability. James Pierre was limited with a calf last week. We'll see where that leads us. I got no new news on TJ. I'm sure I will a little later in the week, but I hadn't heard any new updates regarding his availability or what that looks like as he starts to work his way back to us this week. And so no real news there. I'm certain that we have a lot of bumps and bruises associated with play. That's the nature of this thing. We'll work hard and smart, and sometimes that means being inclusive. And so we probably got a high-intensity walkthrough on our menu tomorrow in an effort to have as many people participate as we can as opposed to running and practicing. But again, that's not outside the ordinary this time of year. You do what you need to do in an effort to get the collective ready and also get them to the stadium in as good a physical condition as you can get them as well. You certainly hope that there's a cumulative effect of the daily work that we've had over the course of this journey that could be an asset to us that we can summons up when we get pressed on a short week like this week. Now I'll give some time and attention to the Detroit Lions. Man, I just got a lot of respect for this group and how they go about their business. They're a competitive group. They're a physical group in all three phases. They're aggressive not only in play but schematically. Got to tip my cap to Coach Campbell and company for that. You see their personality on tape. I'll start first on defense. They've certainly absorbed a lot of attrition in recent weeks, particularly in the secondary, first at corner and then more recently at safety. But they've also done some things in terms of acquiring talent to help fortify those depths, some NFL players, some veterans. Much like we went out and acquired Pep and Doug and others, Asante, that have helped us out. More recently, they've acquired KZ, a former Steeler, that I'm sure is chopping at the bit to be a contributor to them. Arthur Millette, also a former Steeler. And so what they've put on tape and who they've played on tape in recent weeks might not necessarily be who they play in this game. And so we got a lot of respect for that. They're aggressive schematically. They play a lot of man-to-man. They get after you with a variety of blitz packages and so forth. Can't say enough about their linebacker tandem. Very versatile. They play in all circumstances. Did a lot of research on Jack Campbell. We got a lot of Iowa guys in our program and, you know, got a lot of respect for who he is as a football man and how he plays and his relationship with the game and his natural leadership skills. That was very evident. Going to Iowa and participating in their pro day efforts and getting to know those guys, taking them to dinner. He is certainly a natural leader and football player and man. And it appears from the outside that those characteristics have transferred to the professional level. And he's doing similar things for the Lions that he did at the University of Iowa. Certainly we got our hands full up front, minimizing their rush. Starting first and foremost with Aiden, he is elite. He's a game wrecker. He just is. He's a top quality rusher. He's very aware in terms of ball aware, ball searching. His ability to produce fumbles and hunt the ball as he hunts the quarterback speaks for itself. He's got very good hand-eye coordination and fine motor skills for a big man. That was on display in his interception of that screen last week. But he's not a one-man gang. Muhammad is having a breakout year for him as a rushman. Davenport, obviously, is a former first rounder in New Orleans Saints, is also a component of their collective. They got DJ Reader up front, a veteran run stopper, and so certainly they have a bunch of capable men, and I'm sure they're going to be chopping at the bit to get back on the winning track this week, and we just got respect for that as competitors. On the offensive side of the ball, man, they take very good care of the football, and it starts first with Goff. I think he's only thrown 5 interceptions on the season, and you couple that with his quick decision-making, he's got to have one of the top times to throw in football. He makes good and quick decisions. He certainly has some capable eligibles to distribute the ball to. St. Brown and Williams, man, are a formidable tandem. They also have some other guys that are playing extremely well in a lesser role in terms of volume or targets, but are playmakers nonetheless. You know, it's not only about rushing the passer if you're trying to minimize a guy like Goff who's functioning in the ways that he's functioning. He's completing 70% of his passes. He's not throwing the ball to the other team. We better utilize a lot of schematic strategies in terms of coverage makeups, man, zone, simulation pressures. We better work the bat passes, et cetera. It's not only about the rush in terms of getting him and them off rhythm. We better fight for each and every incompletion. And so that's our mindset as we lean in on the week. You couple that with the top-notch running game and that formidable run tandem that they have. We got a big week for us in terms of preparing for those guys. In terms of their running game, can't say enough about the demeanor of their collective. Certainly, I know their offensive line coach and run game coordinator, Hank Fraley, and I remember him as a player. They play as a collective the way he played. He has built that unit in his image. It is a gritty group. They finish. They take pride in terms of winning the line of scrimmage and waging the war of attrition in the run game. And so we'll be challenged and challenged in a big way in that regard. But again, it's December. The road's getting narrow, such is life in the big show, man. And we're all happy, obviously, to be a component of that. But we'll narrow our focus, man, and understand that we pay respect for this big game by living these moments day to day and having great days. It started for us early this morning or late last night, depending on your perspective as a staff. And it'll continue with the guys as they get into the building tomorrow in the effort to move forward towards Sunday. I'll pause and open up for questions.
Mike, you've mentioned that this time of year, games like this are why you were interested in bringing in Aaron Rodgers. He has said kind of much the same thing. Have you noticed anything palpable about him or anything detectable in these last couple games, any difference in how he prepares or plays or the look in his eye, anything like that?
No, nothing relative to his process or his prep process. But it's just value that you can measure, value that you can't measure, and having a guy that's been there and done that, it benefits him. It benefits us as a collective. I think it raises the tide for the collective. It's just certain conversations and things that you don't even worry about. You know, we had a significant possession down late in that game, and he affords us an opportunity to run a misdirection pass, and you don't even have to tell him, hey, throw an incompletion or take a sack because we want the clock running. He knows that. He's lived that life. And so that's just one small example, but there's countless examples of benefits of having a guy with his level of experience, the quality of that experience, particularly this time of year as the road gets narrow.
After the game, Aaron was talking about some of the so-called cast-offs that made significant impacts for you. What have you learned over the years about what it takes to position midseason additions for success, and why is this specific group been able to make an impact quickly?
You know, I'm never surprised by that, to be honest with you. That's why we have cliches like the standard is the standard. One man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. It's not if, it's when, as it pertains to injury in our business. And so if you're in a position like mine, you better work your tail off to ready each and every man that's a part of the program and have that urgency daily. And I certainly do, and we do as a staff. But those are the guys that are the deserving of the credit. I'll never ask guys to be patient. I'll ask them to work while they wait. And a lot of guys have done that, and we get performances like many of them displayed. It's just evidence that they have, and certainly some of them are going to get additional opportunities to do so, and maybe some new guys are going to get opportunities to do so as we move forward. That's just the nature of this thing. I think your ability to adapt and adjust and pivot often defines a collective, and certainly we've had some opportunities to do so and have had some success at times, and we better keep digging because I've just been on enough of these journeys. I know it's a component of it.
You guys signed Kelechi. Did you envision him being a higher volume guy than he was in Philly?
Absolutely. You know, Saquon cast a pretty large shadow, but we played that football team, and Kenny made some significant plays in that game against us, converting third downs early in that game that produced scoring drives. I think he converted three third downs that transferred to 17 points. In the midst of that game. He also covered kicks in that game we played against him. He returns kicks. And so, you know, what we saw was a guy that was a football player first that had a nice skill set to do a lot of things and you know, had some upside because of the ridiculous cast shadow that Saquon cast. So I don't know that any of us are surprised by what he's doing or by what he's capable of because we saw it firsthand in stadium as an opponent.
Two areas where you guys have gotten a lot better in the last 2 weeks, coming out of the locker room in the third quarter. You've been good in both the quarters against Baltimore in this past game, against Miami. What have you done better there, do you think? And what else did you do better in this game when it came to possessing the ball?
You know, I don't know that you can pinpoint a specific thing that you do better. I know that you better just keep working. You know, you don't always get the results that you desire immediately when you have an agenda, but if you believe in the agenda, you keep pounding away, and it might just be that result that we're finally breaking through in some areas that are producing the outcomes. But we might have been in the right neighborhood knocking on the right doors for an extended period of time. I just think that's the challenge of decision making and strategy in this business. Sometimes solutions come to you in an instant and you see the fruit of that instantly. Sometimes your will and your commitment gets tested because you don't necessarily get what you're looking for immediately. We haven't done anything different, significantly different in the last 2 weeks in that area that we hadn't been working on. But certainly, I agree with you. It's been moving in the right direction of late.
Mike, after the Bills game, Aaron kind of publicly challenged the pass catchers just to get on the same page, show up to things. The 2 weeks since, the offense has been clicking. The pass catchers' pass game has been a little bit more seamless. Is that a result of Aaron kind of challenging this group?
I don't know the challenge that you speak of, and so I wouldn't be the guy to speak to that. I'm sure you'll get an opportunity to speak to him in open locker room.
Mike, you mentioned the running backs earlier. It seems like Gibbs and Montgomery complement each other really well. What makes them so dynamic, and what do you think the keys are going to be to try to slow them down?
You know, I think, first of all, they're talented as individuals. They are. They're talented runners, both guys. They certainly have a different skill set. Gibbs having the top end speed that he does, and Montgomery having the pick and vision and interior running talents that he does. And so they complement each other very well, but it's almost disrespectful to not acknowledge their talents as individuals. And I think any tandem that's really good, I think, has a couple of individuals in it that can do it, and they certainly can and do. They need no endorsement from me. I think they, as a collective, they got 21 rushing touchdowns this year. And so we better come, and we better come ready.
Mike, you guys have used more 11 personnel the last two weeks on offense. Was that something that Aaron Rodgers suggested? And what have you guys seen come from that as far as success-wise to open things up?
You know, sometimes it's just based on matchup. What's the best matchup for us relative to opponents? The Dolphins, for example, don't have a lot of depth at corner. Minka plays corner or nickel for them. And so it was probably more advantageous for us to play in three wide receiver sets and get Minka out of a more natural position into a less natural position. And so there's a lot of variables into that discussion and from a strategic standpoint. And we answer those and formulate those plans week in and week out. And so they're subject to change.
You elevated MVS from the practice squad.
I'm sorry?
You elevated or signed MVS to the active roster. What have you kind of seen and learned about him over the last month or so that he's been in the building?
You know, he certainly is a talented guy. He can run. For a taller guy, he can get in and out of breakpoints. And he's got some NFL playmaking experience that's been an asset to us.
TJ been in the facility yet, and whether or not he can be cleared to practice? Do you expect him to be at practice this week?
I don't know if he's been in the facility yet, because I've been in a dark room in the back. He might be in the facility as we speak, and so I don't have a lot of the answers to that, and I was just trying to be transparent when I said I didn't have any new information as I stood here today.
We have you in this setting as opposed to breathing down your neck after practice about this, but is there anything more you can tell us about what you learned about the dry needling technique or how that might continue or not continue with your team?
I have no new information regarding that, none whatsoever.
How's Jack Sawyer progressed, and if you need to lean on him in a tough matchup against Penny Sewell, well, what would that be like?
You know, Jack is doing what a lot of young quality defenders do. They make the best with what you ask them to do, and they work in all areas and get better. And usually those that are playmakers in special teams eventually become playmakers on defense. And he certainly has been that for us. He's made some plays on teams. He made some plays on teams last night. And so I'm never surprised when they transfer that playmaking to the defensive side, when they get more opportunities to do so. He's had some opportunities this year, has made some plays, has had a sack, has had an interception. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he displays that readiness, if he gets an expanded role opportunity this week.
Mike, you have to alter how you prepare defensively when you face a coach that's as aggressive on fourth down as Campbell is?
No, not really. You know, we live it down in and down out. You don't get an opportunity to win fourth down until you win third down. And so that's the spirit in which we go about it.
Mike, is the tush push or Steeler shove, whatever you want to call it, with Connor become more reliable for you guys? And how does that kind of impact your situational decision making?
I think it's been reliable the whole time we've done it. Maybe we've only failed once in Chicago. It just speaks to the versatility that we have in the tight end room. We've talked a lot about it. We got a deep and diverse tight end group. Darnell is a point of attack run blocker. John, who was good run after, you saw that in a lot of ways. We threw him a screen. We pissed him a toss. Muth is a zone killer. You saw that last night. And Connor's a jack of all trades. He's a four-phase special teamer. He does things like that for us. And so I think that's just more of a reflective of the deep and diverse group that we have at that position.
Mike, Patrick Queen talked about the collective guys committing to their jobs and not trying to jump out and do other people's roles and that trust that's been forming. How do you as a head coach try to set a stage to fix those kind of problems when at least a popcorner can come from any direction?
You know, I think a component of it is continuity. And when you infuse a new people in, you don't have a lot of continuity. Certainly over the last several weeks, we've established some continuity, particularly on the back end. For example, when we moved Jalen to free safety full time and acquired Doug and some of that stuff, that began the continuity. And to have that discussion without continuity is not very realistic. And so we certainly have gotten better, but you expect to as a leader, and you also expect it to continue.
Big part of the process to when you guys use more 11 personnel when you don't normally, or when you switch from using a lot of single high to double high safety looks earlier in the season.
You jump the size of the ball there. One time you said 11, and then another time you said one high or two high.
Right, but I'm saying on either side of the ball, is that continuity help when it comes to trying to make those switches in season when you guys try to establish an identity?
Well, there's a lot of layers to that question. You're stressing me out there. I answered the 11 question. It's week to week, and a lot of it is based on the matchup component of the game, and I gave you an example of last night. Now, what was the defensive component of that question?
Like earlier in the year, we guys used a lot of single high safety to start, and you switched to a lot more two high safety. I'm just talking about the continuity and helping.
That's very much week to week, based on who we're playing and what they specialize in and what's required for us to minimize certain components of their attack or people.
Does that apply?
We haven't had a chance to really comb through the tape, but did Dylan Cook play well enough to maybe continue playing in that role even if Andres Pete is healthy?
You know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. He certainly, I thought, did a nice job of representing himself last night. As I mentioned, though, we helped him schematically, but it is our job to do so. But he was a component of a successful winning outing, and so he deserves congratulations for that, and we'll see what this week holds.
What's your discussion with Chris there? I mean, is that the matchup angle that you were discussing. You guys were very good in the middle of the field last night. DK was talking about finding the soft spots in the cover too. Can you still do that against a team, like you said, with Detroit, who plays more man? You might not have as clear of an idea of what they're doing in the secondary because of their attrition.
It's two totally separate discussions. Miami played a lot of shell. They rolled up their corners, and they played two high safeties a bunch. Detroit does a significant amount less than that. And so we'll do what we need to do to be successful and move the ball this week, and it may dictate that we do things differently.
When Pierre is cleared, does he automatically become your top outside?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Mike, was that Herbig's hamstring, was that aggravation of what he dealt with earlier in the year?
I don't know, to be quite honest with you. We just played last night, and I hadn't had a chance to get a thorough update on some of the details regarding individual injuries and where they are and if they're brand new or re-aggravations of past injuries. I just know he has a hamstring.
Mike, what does it say about Ben Skarns' special teams value that you played a guy listed as a wide receiver on the depth chart with a cast on his hand?
You know, he's a football player first. We've talked a lot about it. He's highly productive. He's a functional tackler. He's a big guy for the space that he plays in. It gives him a matchup advantage, particularly when he's in one-on-one circumstances. And so we're thankful that he's capable and willing, even in less than ideal circumstances. And let's see what he has for us this week.
Asante played every snap a couple weeks ago. He hadn't played a game in 15 months, whatever. Were you watching that? Was that something to watch? And I guess he passed the test conditioning-wise and whatever.
To be honest with you, I wasn't even watching it. He's the type of guy that he's in shape 12 months a year. Most corners are. He displayed that in the short period of time that he's been here in practice settings in terms of taking Carr defensive reps and taking defensive reps. And so it was a very little concern to me or to us in terms of his participation last night. And not only that, but he's been an every down player when he was in L.A. And so it wasn't something that was the first time for him or something that was foreign to him.
What have you seen from Adam Thielen when he's not getting targeted, that he's provided value to the team outside of that?
Man, he's excited to be here. He's expressed that. He's a hand-in-the-pile guy. I thought he was very active in the run game last night, for example. You know, you have a lot of ways to impact the game other than touching the football, and certainly his contributions have displayed that in a short period of time.
Anything else?
Aaron praised both him and MVS last week for their detailed work and the timing of getting things done. What does that do for an offense to set a tone for everyone else when you see veteran guys coming in and inject that kind of detail?
You know, I just think that's the benefit of veteran guys.
If Sam Alu can't play, does Spencer go right in the guard, or does he keep his role doing what he does?
It's early in the process. You know, we did an in-game adjustment last night where we brought Ryan McCollum in, and he did both. With a full week to prepare, we may do similar things. We may take a different approach. But larger than that, more important than that, I'm not ready to rule out Isaac at this juncture.
All right.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Things have certainly quieted down on the Mike Tomlin front over the past couple weeks. That's what winning a couple games will do for you. Got interesting a few times there. One with the TJ Watt situation, and I think it was Benzie off the top rope, was it, Limits?
Asking,
how about the dry needling technique? Are there still things going on in the facility? And Tomlin said, I have no new information regarding that, none whatsoever. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Limits, and say that if anybody else was doing dry needling sessions, those have very likely been suspended at the team facility. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. Also considering that it's TJ Watt, the highest paid player on the team. And unfortunately, some things went wrong. And man,
yeah, that's not happening anymore. So forget the dry needling. That isn't happening. He said TJ could be in the facility even as we speak. He didn't know, hasn't seen him, hasn't talked to him. Well, at least hasn't seen him. And then Tomlin went into Carter country, didn't he? Chris,
you're,
Carter.
You're stressing me out there.
Stressing me out there with these 11 personnel questions and trying to get into the nitty-gritty of football.
I love it. I love it from Chris Carter, and I love it from Tomlin as we head into Carter country yet again. Do we have that whole back and forth yet, Limits, with the two questions in a row?
Oh, yeah.
And then Tomlin just, he didn't lose it at all. He just said, "You're stressing me out." This was fantastic.
You're stressing me out there.
Here it is.
Mr. Queen talked about the collective guys committing to their jobs and not trying to jump out and do other people's roles and that trust that's been forming. How do you as a head coach try to set a stage to fix those kind of problems when at least a popcorner can come from any direction?
You know, I think a component of it is continuity. And when you're infusing new people in, you don't have a lot of continuity. Certainly over the last several weeks, we've established some continuity, particularly on the back end. For example, when we moved Jalen to free safety full time and acquired Doug and some of that stuff, that began the continuity. And to have that discussion without continuity is not very realistic. And so we certainly have gotten better, but you expect to as a leader, and you also expect it to continue.
Big part of the process to when you guys use more 11 personnel when you don't normally, or when you switched from using a lot of single high to double high safety looks earlier in the season.
You jumped the size of the ball there. One time you said 11, and then another time you said one high or two high.
On either side of the ball, is that continuity help when it comes to trying to make those switches in season when you guys try to establish an identity?
Well, there's a lot of layers to that question. You're stressing me out there. I answered the.
Did you hear the like collective laugh in the room too?
11 question. It's week to week, and a lot of it is based on the matchup component of the game. And I gave you an example of last night. Now, what was the defensive component of that question?
Earlier in the year, we guys used a lot of single high safety to start. You switched to a lot more two high safety. I'm just talking about the continuity and helping.
That's very much week to week, based on who we're playing and what they specialize in and what's required for us to minimize certain components of their attack or people.
Oh my God, that's golden. Again, I don't know, actually. Do you people out there want to hear about that? Maybe some people do. About 11 personnel. I think if I probably walked around Heinz Field and asked 30,000 people what 11 personnel is, it probably 50-50 at best. I don't know. But some people find it interesting, and that's Chris's job, and he does a very good job at the Post-Gazette of getting in the weeds with that stuff. I just find the whole thing humorous because Tomlin did today, I think, right? I think coming off a loss, it's probably a lot less humorous, but I love the answer.
Yeah.
The second question with the answer again, forget about that long first one, but I glean a lot of joy from this.
Process to when you guys use more 11 personnel when you don't normally, or when you switched from using a lot of single high to double high safety looks earlier in the season?
You jumped the size of the ball there. One time you said 11, and then another time you said one high or two high.
Right, but I'm saying on either side of the ball, is that continuity help when it comes to trying to make those switches in season when you guys try to establish an identity?
Well, there's a lot of layers to that question. You're stressing me out there.
I really like that.
You're stressing me out there.
And then Benzi. Do we have Benzi and whoever else was asking the...
on TJ Watt.
You know Tomlin now goes in... Listen, Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette has now established himself as one of the people who clearly irritates Tomlin in the grand tradition of Jury Rand.
Honestly, I don't think that... He does irritate Tomlin. I think that he appreciates the question.
He did not appreciate the question a couple weeks ago. He absolutely did not appreciate that question.
Well, I think that he probably, I don't know if he thinks that Carter's asking some of these questions.
He gets irritated when people get into the weeds on, you know, two high, one high, 11 personnel, 13. He does not want to answer anything like that.
That should be just coach speak and discussions they have in the room, and he thinks it's appropriate for the media. Yeah.
I think he just gets irritated. It's no different than when David Todd used to ask him analytics questions all the time. So I think that Chris, to his credit, is now on that list.
Mm.
In the grand tradition of Jury Rand and David Todd, Aditi Kinkabwala, Brooke Pryor, Benzi the Magnificent, and now Chris Carter.
A lot of very good and accomplished reporters.
Absolutely.
Here is the back and forth on the TJ Watt injury update, where he didn't want to give a further update because he doesn't have an update.
Has he been in the facility yet, and whether or not he can be cleared to practice? Do you expect him to be at practice this week?
I don't know if he's been in the facility yet because I've been in a dark room in the back. He might be in the facility as we speak. And so I don't have a lot of the answers to that. And I was just trying to be transparent when I said I didn't have any new information as I stood here today.
We have you in this setting as opposed to breathing down your neck after practice about this, but is there anything more you can tell us about what you learned about the dry needling technique or how that might continue or not continue with your team?
I have no new information regarding that. None whatsoever.
He was in the dark room. Joe, what was he doing, developing photos back there? What's he doing in the dark room?
That's what he used to do in, it was a photography
dark
class
room, right?
at Amherst High School.
Is that
used
what
to
it was
go
called?
Back into the dark room and put the photos in that little film, and they would come out as photos. It was in crinkling.
So, do you
limits.
Think he's developing photos back there, or is that where they watch film in the dark room?
In the film for sure. But there's two parts there. Can you tell us any more about the dry needling technique? What if Tomlin then launched a soliloquy with everything you ever wanted to know about dry needling?
So there are 45 different needles that take part in this, and you want to make sure that it is just one small centimeter into your back.
Here's where you want to enter on the scapula, right here. Can I get a demonstration going here? Let's pull out the needles, and so I don't think we were going to get that.
He pulls out a poster board, show you a further demonstration.
And then is that continuing in the facility? Again, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you will never see another dry needle in the Steelers facility as long as any of us lives. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. It's sunny with a high of 34 today. Andy Russell, a low of 14. Good old George Pickens. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Let's go round up a mongoose, shall we, Limits? The Batconian mongoose, Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette, in the library once again. The last time this turned fascinating right away when we had Brian blindly reach behind him and pull out a book. Let's do that again, Brian. Reach All right. behind you, just grab a book and tell us what the title is. It's your wife's library, correct? So we might not get a sports book.
It's half and half. We've done this. This is our third round now. The first one was a sports book. Second one was a wife book.
Yeah.
Here's a tiebreaker of sorts.
What do we have?
Uh-huh. There's a bookmark in this one, first of all. So
somebody's actually
looks like
reading
she may have gotten to page 32 of It Starts With Us by Colleen Hoover.
Is this a marriage counseling type of book, or what's the book about?
Actually, yeah. First line of the synopsis here on the back cover. Lily and Ryle have just settled into a civil co-parenting rhythm with their daughter, Emerson, when Lily runs into Atlas nearly 2 years after they last spoke.
Uh-oh. That sounds like
trouble.
That's
going to get dicey.
Yeah,
is going to get dicey. I wonder if Atlas shrugs.
He might at some point, yes. Very good line, Brian. All right, let's get to Tomlin. What stood out to you?
Oh, man, I mean, kind of wanted Mike to say anything funny or interesting. He had some opportunities, and he's very much on autopilot, I think, 12 hours after leaving the stadium, more or less. So kind of a run-of-the-mill, by-the-book Tuesday presser. A little bit of injury updates. The Derek Harmon thing is nice, but also I think we kind of knew that was the case, and he was being cautious with him. He didn't want to give Rodgers too much credit, I suppose, for the pass catchers waking up a couple weeks ago. Granted, that also dovetailed with Roman Wilson being on the outside looking in. And I guess those were two things immediately that stood out. Jack Campbell, I had a feeling he was going to gush about Jack Campbell.
They had dinner together, apparently. Yeah. Campbell. Yeah, right. They went out for the old college dinner, Jack Campbell and probably other Iowa guys and Tomlin.
Yep. Yep. Jack Campbell, I mean, I feel like the Steelers were linked to him a lot going into that draft. And then the Lions, a lot of people thought, reached for both him and Jahmyr Gibbs. And now you look and Detroit knew what they were doing. It wasn't like Mike Mayock at one point with the Raiders where they were taking guys way higher than the media consensus boards. Or I guess, in fairness, Terrell Edmonds here once upon a time. But the Lions have struck gold with those two.
And the dinner question from the draft always brings up another one, Brian. Do you make a better impression if you skimp on dinner and save the team some money or show some confidence and go for surf and turf, perhaps a bottle of wine and dessert?
I mean, I think, first of all, if you're just giving me the dilemma between those two, I would err toward the latter because I think Mike Tomlin wants to see an alpha male in that setting. And more so than what you order, I think he's looking at how you order it. Be decisive. Know what you want. Don't even worry about whether you're saving them money or costing them money.
Yeah.
Just be the first guy to speak up. Be the captain of the group. I think that's what he wants to see in those settings more than a specific menu item.
Kabali would just order something like pierogies, right? Because he wouldn't want to cost the company any money like he does over at the McAfee show. They give him an unlimited budget and he goes to sheets. They want him to spend more and he won't.
Could be reverse psychology.
Maybe. And then he waded into Carter Country once again today, Brian, and that became the comic part of this is Mike Tomlin and Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette, who does the deep statistical stuff, going back and forth. Let's take a listen to that with Tomlin becoming somewhat exasperated. Limits?
We certainly have gotten better, but you expect to as a leader, and you also expect it to continue.
Big part of the process to when you guys use more 11 personnel when you don't normally, or when you switched from using a lot of single high to double high safety looks earlier in the season.
You jumped the size of the ball there. One time you said 11, and then another time you said one high or two high.
Right, I'm saying on either side of the ball, is that continuity help when it comes to trying to make those switches in season when you guys try to establish an identity?
There's a lot of layers to that question. You're stressing me out there.
Brian, what's happening here? I think Tomlin, I think he has reached his limit, no pun intended limits, with the deep analytical statistical questions. Yes?
First of all, may I suggest Carter County as opposed to Carter Country?
Sure. Carter Country was a good show once upon a time, but yes, all suggestions welcome. That. Yeah.
Carter County has like a grittier feel to it. Like you go across that county line and you're about to get into the world of 12 personnel and duo blocks and double A mugs. So yes, Tomlin was locked up in Carter County for a little bit there. Chris is obviously very good at what he does and knows so much about the X's and O's of it and can break down football with the best of them. I just think Tomlin doesn't really go for it in these settings. I don't think it's what he expects. I don't really think it's what a lot of coaches expect. Like I actually once did, I guess he wouldn't mind me saying this, Pat Narduzzi, when I was on the pit beat one time, did like a chalk talk with us. Like we went in a pit football meeting room and he put plays up on a projector and kind of explained stuff in his defense. And, you know, we were allowed to take notes and obviously ask him questions. So, you know, I think a lot of this would lend itself more to a setting like that, which Mike Tomlin obviously does not do with us. But yeah, I think he's getting caught off guard by some of this. And, you know, these are quick back and forths with the coach oftentimes about injuries or a player evaluation or a decision that he made. So yeah, exasperated might be the right word, but I credit Chris for knowing his stuff and continuing to hammer away and it's not for no reason. He's usually writing film study and analyses for us at the PG on this material.
Yeah, Eddie Olczyk did that with us once, and it was uncomfortable because certain people kept wanting to be the ones to ask the questions when Edzo was doing a schematics breakdown of hockey. It felt like we were back in a classroom, and you have certain people who want to ask the questions. You know what I mean, Brian? Who want to step up and say, oh, well, I know you're doing this and this and this, but why didn't you do that? So it became very uncomfortable very quickly. How did the Narduzzi session go? Was Jerry DePaula there and did he ask questions?
Oh, I'm sure he was. Yeah. And I'm sure he did. He probably led the league in questions asked that day, knowing Jerry, and I hope he's doing great in retirement.
But, he is doing great. Yeah, no, I have an cool answer thing for you there. He is doing great. He's substitute teaching, and his wife, Tess, came over to the baseball, the Card Castle in Cranberry on Friday. She came
That's
in.
That's their neck of the woods, yeah.
Yeah, she came in with homemade trail mix and told me that Jerry was substitute teaching that day. How about that?
What age?
I don't know. I think high school kids.
Wow. That is interesting. Hey, I mean, he dealt with 18, 19, 20-year-olds on a daily basis covering college athletics. That homemade trail mix, that's a bit of a curveball at this time of year. Usually it's cookies.
Yeah, I didn't expect it, but I've eaten it. It's delicious.
Peanut brittle. I think for a solid 3 to 4 years of my life, I'd say age range like 5 to 9-ish, Puppy Chow was my favorite food on the entire earth.
Dog food?
No, you know what I'm talking about? Limits. Puppy chow?
No, I thought you meant dog food too.
It's like
what are you talking about?
It's like the powdered sugar coated Chex Mix or Trail Mix. Is word for that?
Yeah. I've never heard that. Yeah.
I just looked it up. Now I know what you mean. It has like
delicious
M&Ms in it. You can put some pretzels in it.
Sure.
I didn't realize that's what it was called, Brian.
I think I would eat a pound of that a day when I was in probably like how old my son is now or maybe a little bit older.
To be honest, Brian, if I had a suggestion for Test DePaul, I might have suggested M&Ms in there with a little sweetener, but
it was
still
Hayward sweetener.
Really good. Still really good.
M&Ms, I think, are pretty necessary, or some sort of chocolate component, as Mike Tomlin would say,
right,
needs to round out any trail mix that you're going to put out there.
It's the best Christmas cookie, Brian, and I think a lot of people believe this, the little chocolate Hershey Kiss in the middle of a peanut butter cookie. You know that one, Limits?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
I think it's like a peanut butter blossom, colloquially known as like a thumbprint, which I think is slightly different, right?
Yeah, thumbprint is different.
Yeah.
It's like icing sort of with a crater.
Yeah, with a sugar
crater. Crater is a good
word. How do you eat those? Do you pop the whole thing in your mouth or do you nibble around and take down the Hershey Kiss?
Yeah, and are you a nibbler? I like to just
you nibble.
They're great. Yeah. No.
Yeah, you just got to watch you don't stab your tongue with the tip of the Hershey Kiss there.
Yeah.
Do you ever eat reindeer noses? Where it's a pretzel and you put a Hershey Kiss on the pretzel and then you put an M&M on the Hershey Kiss. And you end up putting it in the oven, and then you freeze them.
Wow.
I've never heard of that. I've had the M&M in the pretzel, for sure, like the little grid square pretzels with the M&M. You can eat about 50 of those in a sitting.
I was in Nashville last weekend, Brian, or maybe it was 2 weekends ago now. I can't remember. And there were two reindeer, literal reindeer, that were being kept in a space that's no bigger than this studio. And my wife and I thought it was very sad to see. It wasn't. Like the kids were thrilled, but something struck me sad. Reindeer with these giant antlers.
I was going to say, weren't the antlers kind of like unsettling to look at?
They were.
Almost?
Yeah. It was like, why is there an animal where there's like 30 pounds of whatever antlers are made of on top of their head? Why is that natural? Why were they made that way, Brian? And then they're confined into a tiny space and it felt cruel, to be honest.
Well, I think it's an aerodynamic thing for Santa's sleigh, obviously. I mean, they need to be able to fly on Christmas Eve to deliver the presents.
And, fair point,
We went to a light-up night parade around here, and they had one of those in a pen or whatever. And, because you just see it, and you kind of expect, all right, it's going to be, you know, a deer with fake antlers or something. But no, those things are legit, and they are striking.
Do you think Rudolph could be real? Brian, like with an actual red nose that glowed. Do you think that would be possible?
Rudolph is real, Limits.
He is real, Limits. Why do you question it?
Well, he is real, but then like I really do wonder how could we end up even making Rudolph feel even more further alive, Joe, is what I'm trying
to do. Let me bring this back to a Steelers topic real quick. Why didn't, given the time of year, instead of cast-offs, why didn't Aaron Rodgers refer to his pass catchers as an island of misfit toys?
That would have been better. Yeah. And
with
then
the Charlie in the box.
Yeah, the Charlie in the box.
And the train with square wheels.
Very sad.
The cowboy that rides the ostrich.
An ostrich-riding cowboy, Brian.
How about the bird that doesn't fly but swims?
That's Marquez Valdes-Scantling, for sure. The box guy is Kenny Gainwell, I think. It also was hilarious, the comedic timing of him reeling off these cast-offs, which I hope you have that clip. Maybe you can play it. But, like, he goes, Connor Hayward, he's an afterthought.
Yeah, an afterthought.
Jeez. And then I think it was Brooke who said, well, do you consider yourself a cast-off? No, I'm not a cast-off.
Certainly.
That was like from Curb Your Enthusiasm or something.
There's some cast-offs if you look at our roster. Which it makes it really special. You know, Kenny Gainwell signed a next to nothing contract.
He's broke.
Connor Hayward, an afterthought, had a touchdown run. Marquez been on a couple teams. Adam Thielen got cut.
No one wanted them.
Samuel was on the street for a long time. So, he was learning about the character of the guys we brought in.
Yeah, Kenny Gainwell's broke. Connor Hayward's a scrub. Nobody wanted Phelan or MVS.
Like, I knew what he was getting at. It was eloquently said.
Yes.
But like, for him to be that candid about it, and then the comeback of, oh, are you kind of in that group too? Considering,
well,
you
not
were on
me.
The street
no,
for months?
Definitely
no,
not me.
No, I wouldn't say that about myself. No, I'm not a cast off. Just those guys. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was good stuff. All right, are you staying or leaving this week? What's up?
I'll stay.
Good. It's the Batconian
Christmas cookie talk, Christmas song talk, potentially.